Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Big Ten Associate Commissioner Rick Boyajis, who part of his job is to oversee the officiating in the conference. We'll talk to him about that in just a few moments. Looking forward to that very much, and then we'll hear from Cale Sanderson in the final half hour of our show today. Great to have you with us on the show. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Last night, Anthony Edwards, the number one overall pick in the draft, gets it going with a big slam dunk over Joseph Wiseman, the number two pick in the draft.
Edwards down the lane. Anthony Edwards.
Yo.
Elevated and hammered.
He got up so high. That was a little miscommunication. Wow. Wiseman, welcome to my poster. The number one pick and the number two pick.
Anthony Edwards with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Just in case you weren't sure what team he was with in the NBA. Because a lot of people aren't. He played 1 year at Georgia and then opted for the draft. Again, today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Lincoln, Kia, Hyundai. All right, great new product lines. Fabulous pre-owned inventory. Great selection, all with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. Sales staff that works with you and a service department that is second to none. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. It's not the easiest job on the planet to be the head of officiating in a conference. Rick Boyajis, for example, oversees the Big Ten, the Mid-American Conference. And he joins us, Rick. What kind of perspective? I mean, you're a former coach. I mean, you're head coach at William & Mary, assistant at Ohio State for a period of time, plus other jobs along the way. So what kind of perspective is that giving you in this job?
Well, I think I probably focus maybe a lot more on the actual play calling and, you know, the correct versus incorrect or no calls just as much as calls. I think a lot of the former officials that go on to supervise or coordinate officiating, you know, they learn in the beginning a lot about the mechanics of officiating, you know, positioning, just kind of the dynamics of what's now a three-man crew. It used to be a two-man crew. But I think for me, those are the things I had to learn as I made the shift from coaching into administration. So I'm much more aware now of how the officials move, what they're responsible for on the floor, you know, their positioning and things like that. But at its core, I probably focus every bit as much, if not more, on just so we get in the plays right.
If there is a common yet subtle complaint in college basketball officiating, it is the number of games that certain officials, and the big-time ones are the ones everybody wants, how many games they work during the course of the week. How difficult is it for you to balance the quality of that official versus the number of games they're doing, plus the travel time and the fatigue that's figured in? How important a factor is that for you?
Well, first of all, I mean, I'm in total agreement of basically what the, you know, the public perception is of that issue. The problem is I'm virtually powerless to do anything about it. And the reason I say that is because the referees in college basketball, as Bill may have mentioned in football, they're independent contractors versus the NBA where they're totally on salary, they're full-time employees, they have benefits, etc. So the only thing that I can control, Steve, is the number of games I give them in the Big Ten Conference, the number of times they see individual teams, you know, on the road or at home. But it's a little bit of a fallacy that any official is a Big Ten ref or an ACC ref or a Big East ref, because they all work all the leagues, especially the elite officials. So the most games I give a guy is maybe in the 25 to 35 range. And these are guys, like you said, that most of them are working 75 to 100 games, the ones that work the NCAA tournament. So it's really difficult. All I can do is space them out as I see necessary. For instance, I never try to have one official work the same team twice in a seven-day period. Now, sometimes I have a snow emergency or weather or transportation, but you know, that just gives you an idea of one little thing that I can control. I can control that. But I can't control guys that are going to work more than 60, 70, 80 games. And in that case, I have to try to weigh their credentials and their experience and how much my coaches want them, in addition to how our staff rates these guys. But again, I can only control the games that the Big Ten assign.
Give us an idea what you're looking for when you are grading guys and during the course of a season. What are certain specific areas where it's, you know, obviously getting the call right is the big one. What are some other things that you're looking for in order to allow them to make more calls and be in better position?
Well, I mean, I think there are a lot of different issues. I think it's important that the fans understand, for the first time ever, we break down every single game in the Big Ten Conference. In other words, whether we have staffers on site or not grading the game, we break down every game by video. So within about 24 hours, we actually break down every single play from every single game. So not only do we grade out every whistle, every violation, every foul call, we also grade out every no call, which is really every bit as important, what we don't whistle. So what happens is we take a pretty in-depth grading sheet, and we have all these codes, and we input all this data into the computer. And basically what we try to do is we try to come up with 10 to 15 plays, and we put together a video montage within 24 hours of 15 plays. Not all bad, but we try to capture everything that we think is incorrect or questionable, and then anything that's just an interesting play. If we're going to capture good plays, we're trying to capture things that are, you know, you have to be on your toes and moving and getting angles to spot. So that gets posted, and the officials on the game get an email immediately, and they have about 2 days to watch the clips. So for the first time ever, you know, every single play in the Big Ten is being evaluated, and then all of those codes, all the legends that go in that you know, we have codes for, you know, a no calls. We have 15 different no calls. No calls on a block charge. No call body. No call hand check. No call travel, no call carry. We have the same codes for fouls. We have violations. So we have all this data. It all goes into the computer. And then at any random time, I can cull all the information. We can filter it. So I can say to my video guys, hey, give me all the travel calls that we thought were correct in the last 2 weeks. Give me all the incorrect travels that were called, and give me all the incorrect no-call travels. So we're screening all this stuff. But you know, at its core, I think the main things for us are play calling, judgment, mobility, which is an issue. You know, we're going through kind of a generational change where the fans have seen the same guys reffing for 20, 25 years, and you know, they're all coming to the end of their careers. But some of them, you know, although they don't move as well, the coaches are giving them very, very high ratings because they like how they manage games, they trust them, they know what they're going to get. So it's kind of a combination of all that.
When you hire an official, or you're looking to hire an official, and you see the basic skill sets, I know in talking with Bill Carollo, Bill said that one of the things he looks for beyond skill sets is personality. How well do they work with people? How do they conduct themselves? Does that enter into your hiring process as well with these independent contractors?
Yeah, it really does. I mean, they need to have really good people skills. They need to interact with the players on the court who are of generation, and then they need to get along and manage the head coaches, you know. And, you know, the head coaches in a league like ours are high profile. It's it's big salaries for, you know, tremendous pressure. There's a lot of stress. There is a skill and an art to it. The other thing that we do, we've created a three-league consortium. So as much as I'm overseeing the Big Ten, I also have control over the Mid-American Conference and the Summit League. And Bill, he might have spoke to the football consortium. They have a number of different leagues that they're in with.
He did.
So I'm looking at young officials, and we're trying to bring them from Division III and II up into leagues like the Mid-American Conference and the Summit League. And then we're monitoring their process and their progress there. And then we're watching them through postseason events. So there's a lot of oversight and training that goes along with just regard the regular grading that happens and observation that happens. So, no young ref that comes into the Big Ten is just green. I mean, they're going to have worked for years in the mid or low major level, and then I'm going to first sprinkle them into the non-conference games, which we win, you know, a high percentage of between November and New Year's, and then I start to sprinkle them in around the conference for a couple seasons. So we kind of have a whole process with bringing along, you know, young officials.
For you, now for Bill, it's Monday morning, maybe even sometimes Sunday morning. For you, it's sometimes Monday morning too, especially with the number of Big Ten games that are played on Sundays. For you, you do have to deal with the coach that does call up, and you'll get a lot of those calls during the course of the season.
We play five days a week. We play Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, right. Saturday, Sunday. So there's games every night. Everything's nationally televised, either on CBS, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, or the Big Ten Network. So there are really no secrets. I'm also out. I try to get to 2 to 3 or 4 games each week in person, as does my staff. So there's a lot of communication. It's great now because we have so much video oversight. In the past, the coaches would identify a number of plays. They'd have their video guys cut them up. They'd burn a DVD or, you know, a VHS tape. They'd FedEx it to the office. You know, that would take a couple days. Myself and my predecessor, you know, might be traveling. So it could take a week to get a response. Now what happens is I just tell the coaches, look, all you got to do now is you just got to send me an email, and all you have to do is give me the game times of the plays. So if Pat Chambers sends me an email with 4 plays from last night's game, the first thing I do is I go to that script that we create, and I'll look and I'll say to Pat, hey, you know, just know all 4 of those calls were tagged, they were edited, and they're part of that video montage, and the officials are going to see them within the next 36 hours. So it's changed how we communicate with the head coaches. It's much more timely. There's more accountability now than there's ever been. And I think that's fair. As an ex-coach, I have an expectation that they should be accountable. And to be honest, their salaries have gone up dramatically over the last 2 decades, a lot because we compete against each other. You know, the Big East competes against the ACC and the SEC and the Big Ten to try to acquire the services of the best officials. So we probably haven't helped ourselves over 20 years and from the standpoint of controlling costs, and it's been competitive, and so they're very well compensated, and I think there should be this kind of accountability as you find in NFL or the NBA.
Bill, when I talk with Bill Carollo, one of the things we discuss, of course, replay officials. You don't have replay officials, but I think what a lot of fans do not realize is now it's mandatory for the producer on the broadcast to meet with the officials at some point, because they're going to have to get on the headsets at some point to talk with them. To develop at least a personal relationship between producer and official, give us an idea how much that helps in the process and when they do go to a replay, of speeding up what they need to do to keep the game moving.
Well, first I think it's important that the fans understand there are certain things we can go to the monitor for, and there are other things we can't. And some of it makes no sense. You know, I'll give you an example. We could go 3 times in a ball game involving Penn State where a shot is either a 2 or 3 point shot. You know, is the toe on the line? Is it not? We're going to blow the whistle instantaneously, which is different from the NBA. The NBA does it at the first media timeout, so they don't stop the game. And that's something that I've been pushing. Look at 2s and 3s. if there's a three-point shot that's hoisted at the expiration of a shot clock, and the shot clock doesn't expire simultaneously with zeros on the game clock at the end of the half of the game, we can't look at it. So to the average fan, they might say, well, how does that make sense? You go look at a two or a three, that's a one-point difference, and this guy just fired up a three-pointer at the end of a shot clock violation or, you know, at 35 seconds, and you can't go look at that. And hopefully we rely on the color analyst or the play-by-play announcer. So that's just one example of what we can go for. We can't go to look at goaltending plays off the backboard, for instance. So I'm pushing for more technology because we're kind of leading the country with oversight in the use of technology. So that, you know, that's a big part of it. But I think when you see them put the headset on, they just, fans need to know. They're talking directly to the producer who is trying to get a feel for, is it a three-point shot? Is it a timing error? You know, what are we going over there to look at? Some things we can look at by rule, other things we can't. But they're queuing it up in the control room at the same time that they're queuing up commercials and looking at probably a minimum of four camera angles. So there's a lot going on, and sometimes that's why it may take an extra 20, 30 seconds longer than maybe it should.
But again, we're in an era, I think fans have accepted that. I mean, it's now an accepted part of the game that that's why they wait for it. Idealistically, moving forward, I hand you the ability to put more technology in the game. What do you think, it's just your pure opinion now, should actually be reviewable in college basketball?
Well, for me personally, you know, I'd like to see us make that move and look at twos and threes during the media timeouts because we've got them at, as you know, at 16 minutes, 12 minutes, 8 minutes, and 4 minutes. Now, if we had a situation in the last 4 minutes, we just have to go instantaneously. We don't know when the next break in the action would be, and we'd be out of media timeouts. I'd like to go to see the end of shot clock expirations. I'd like to see goaltending plays only off the glass. The rule in basketball with goaltending on the glass is if the ball is above the level of the rim and it comes into any contact with the backboard, it can't be touched. And I think when we look at video, we almost always know whether it is or it isn't. I think the downward flight, a shot that's on its downward flight, is really tricky, and you could spend 10 minutes over there looking at some of those.
Yeah, that's too tough.
I don't know that would be, you know, beneficial. But other than those, I'd like to go maybe for you know, even a couple out-of-bounds plays in the last 30 seconds or the last minute. I think the NBA is ahead of the college game with regard to, you know, their use of technology. They're not using it, you know, for a ton of things, but I think that last minute is so crucial. And there was one in the Celtics game last night. There was an out-of-bounds call that was changed that I thought was valuable because those involve they've involved possessions. And they're crucial to the way the game finishes.
Yeah, that was the Haslam play when they said it was out on Rondo originally, and it was off Haslam out of bounds.
Exactly. All right. And, you know, you put that in the college game, and, I mean, it's tough. A lot of times it's very difficult for the lead official. The lead official is a guy under the hoop, and sometimes you're almost too close to the play. So that ref on the baseline is looking at four hands and – sometimes officials on the outside might have a better shot at it in the way the fans kind of have a better look at some plays sometimes.
Rick, thanks so much. This was absolutely invaluable, I think, for everybody listening. It just gives them a better feel as to where everything is right now, and I think you enlightened a lot of people today. Because
Steve, I appreciate it. You know, we do this a couple times during the season. I mean, you know, I never am in a position publicly where I'll comment on judgment calls. But, you know, just to give an example, I have regular conference calls with the on-air talent in the Big Ten Network, and we talk about rules and just different situations. So I enjoyed it myself, and, you know, don't hesitate to reach out.
He is in charge of the officials in the Big Ten, Mid-American Conference as well. It's Rick Boyajis, Associate Commissioner of the Big Ten Conference. It just, you know, it's a little different. Just give you a little perspective on what they're thinking about. We've done this with Bill Carollo before on football. We've done this with Rick before on basketball. And I just think it's invaluable at least to hear from their perspective what they're thinking, why they're thinking, how they go about this whole thing. And it's not as, you know, people think that they just blow coaches off, they blow fans off. The officials get a free pass. You know, they don't go back and really look at things. No, they go back and they look at everything. You know, I've talked to officials who will privately tell you that the worst thing that they can do, I mean, for them, the worst feeling for them is that they get back to the locker room and there's a text saying, get a hold of me. Well, you're hoping it's just a reschedule thing, but in all likelihood, it's about something that just happened in the game you worked. Hey, look, an official does not want to be the focus of attention. They don't want the country looking at them. All right, we got a lot going on. We'll hear from Cale Sanderson. A lot of people wanted to hear that again. We'll do that in the final half hour of the show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Final half hour of the show. What has just been a wintry, lousy day today. A little bit of snow, a lot of sleet, a lot of freezing rain. But still great to have you with us on the show. And today's show is brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Lincoln, Kia, Hyundai. Great new inventory across the board. Hyundai had just had a record year, as a matter of fact. Sunbury Motors is a big reason why. They have great deals, fabulous service department as well, but the sales staff's going to do a great job of working with you. Your budget means everything to you, which means it means everything to them as well. So they're going to help you out, going to work it out in such a way where it's comfortable for all sides. And not only that, they have great pre-owned inventory in case that's the route you think you should go. And they have a great selection of that, all with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. This is all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Well, the Penn State wrestling team has not been able to get a dual meet in yet. They will. I mean, they were supposed to wrestle Rutgers to start. They were supposed to then wrestle Michigan State. So they've been in a holding pattern. Meanwhile, women's volleyball, for example, they're in a pause right now. And they're, you know, and for example, you can't be involved with anything against Michigan right now. They're in a 14-day pause, as mandated by the Department of Health in the state of Michigan. So it's right now, it's taking a little bit for some sports to get into gear. But we had Cale Sanderson on the show last Friday, and it turned out that the time frame we could get him was at 3:35, which means unless you listen on the podcast, which obviously it's there, you didn't get an opportunity in this time slot, this half hour, to listen to him. And for some people, this is the half hour that they can listen to. So we thought it would be great because, look, getting Cale on the show is, I mean, let's be honest about it, it's a big get. There's no getting around it. That it is a big get to get Cale Sanderson on the show. Like we've had James Franklin on the show, it's a big get. So getting Cale on the show is a big deal. Just like on Thursday, we're going to get Peter King on the show. He's going to join us, talk about the Hall of Fame voting and about the Super Bowl as well. So for those who didn't get a chance to hear it, I had a chance to talk with him last week. And we ran through a wide variety of topics, from his current team to how things set up to the Olympic trials to where wrestling is today and his concerns with the not just the pandemic, but also, you know, what effect it could have on the sport in general. Not Penn State wrestling, but in general. So with that, we do the customary. We welcome Cale Sanderson to the show.
Hey, Steve. Yeah, Happy New Year. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you on. All right, so obviously you're in the pause right now. So what's your advice to your wrestlers as to, you know, as to how they need to handle this right now until you get the green light?
Yeah, we're in the pause, but if the student athletes haven't recently tested positive, or they're in a quarantine or a contact tracing type of situation, we're able to practice. So you know, we're able to see the majority of the team every day, which is really helpful, obviously. But yeah, we're just you know, the time will come, you know, the opportunity will be here, and we just got to be ready when it is. And we're expecting that to be Sunday against Michigan State.
All right, so Cale, let's get to a couple things that they put in this year for the NCAA. The ability to wrestle, and I apologize for the lack of a better word, exhibition matches. How much is that going to help, especially with the ability to get wild cards if you can get four matches in?
Yeah, I like the idea of exhibition matches, just especially this year, just because if you're not a starter, you don't have the option to compete anywhere. There aren't open tournaments on the weekends or anything, so... So it's great just to keep the whole team involved and engaged. I think that's you know, that's a lot of fun for everybody, but also gives student athletes a chance to get multiple matches. Just because with COVID and everything, you just don't know if matches are going to get canceled at some point, or individuals won't be, or you know, a team won't have a certain weight class because of, you know, maybe positive tests. So getting to number four, you have to have four matches to be considered for a wild card if you weren't able to go to the conference meet, right? And it's a 17-day period in the Big Ten. So if you were to get sick, you know, probably 20-something days before the Big Ten, because you still have to be cleared and trained and be ready to go, you know, you're not going to compete in the Big Ten. And with the way the adjustments they've made, it's possible if you to get a wild card now, which is, I like that. I thought the people and leadership in the sport have done a really good job to accommodate the challenges that we have this year with COVID.
Yeah, and there's another accommodation too. I believe in the Big Ten, instead of traveling 13, you're allowed to travel 16 and allowed to travel 20 if it's a, quote, tri-meet. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yep. Yeah, that's nice. And that just, again, helps to get additional wrestlers in there that can get those exhibition matches in, and even you know, if you fail the, you know, a test the day of, and some of them are false positives, as we've seen in some of the other sports, well, you have a backup, you know. And when you're traveling 13 guys and you have 10 weight classes, and something doesn't go right, or you have somebody sick, or there's an injury on the road, you just don't have options there. So the 16 is nice for a lot of reasons. Yeah, and 20 obviously is even better.
What is it like for you because your wrestlers love to wrestle. They want to wrestle. What is it like for a coach to deal with a team that is sitting there aching to wrestle right now?
Yeah, you know, I think for the most part they want to wrestle. And you can see when you watch them compete, you can kind of tell who wants to be there more than others. But yeah, these guys want to compete, and it's you know, getting set back a week and being put on pause was very frustrating, obviously for the squad. And but it is what it is, you know. It's just part of reaching goals and being focused, is being able to, you know, just stay disciplined and keep your eyes on your goals even when adversity or obstacles or whatever may appear, and as we know, they usually don't appear as you would expect. So that's why why it's called adversity, I guess. So, So they're fine, and we just say, hey, let's just stay ready, and you know, the opportunity is going to come, and let's be ready when it does.
Yeah, it's, quote, the free year, as everybody knows, in terms of eligibility. So, what do you think that does nationally for lineups? What quality of wrestling will we see because of the free year?
Well, yeah, I think for the most part, there just aren't going to be kids redshirting, or as this is an Olympic year, people would have the option to, in our sport, just a few based on their credentials could take an Olympic redshirt year also. And up until this being called a free year, we had a few of our guys that were planning on doing that just because they didn't want to risk losing the opportunity to compete again. So with that being said, I think at least my thought or understanding would be people are just going to wrestle their best teams, their best kids, and it should be a lot of fun. I know for us, our team got a lot more exciting when they said it was a free year and we no longer had everybody planning on redshirting and Olympic redshirting that could.
You mentioned the Olympic part of it. The Olympic trials were supposed to have been here April 3rd and 4th 10 months ago. So what's the status of that right now leading into Tokyo this summer?
You know, that's up in the air still. I think it's being discussed with Penn State and USA Wrestling. Obviously, we want to host the event, and that's the plan. I think USA Wrestling's looking at this is a big fundraiser for them, and being able to host the event where they can have fans is important. So we're kind of trying to see and if that's something that we'll be able to do, and if so, how many or what percentage of the Jordan Center? Because this was a big event. I mean, it sold out very quickly, well over a year ago when the tickets became available. It's just a lot of talent and a lot of exciting wrestlers on the circuit right now. A lot of them are in the Nittany Line Wrestling Club. So, it's kind of uncertain right now. I couldn't really give you an answer, but you know, we're planning on hosting, and whether there'll be fans there or not, you know, that's the question.
Yeah, you said sold out quickly. I think it was minutes.
it did in
minutes. Obviously, we're at a point, Cale, where we don't know what the future holds. We never know what the future holds anyway. How much time do you spend? Obviously, you've got to take care of what you're doing at Penn State and other things, but also, you know, how much time do you spend thinking about the sport big picture personally?
Well, I think about, I think you've got to be progressing, whether it's our individual program or an individual in the program or as a coach or as a staff. I mean, you've got to keep trying to get better, and that's the fun part of what we're doing. I think as a sport, we have to be doing the same things. You know, we have to say, well, all right, this is where we were 10 years ago, 5 years ago. All right, where are we today? And if we're not moving forward and climbing and growing and getting stronger, well, then, you know, we're not doing a very good job, right? And so I think you've got to always consider those things and just be willing to go to bat and stick your neck out and just try to grow and build. Because that, as a sport, college wrestling has never been more popular. The viewership that they have on the Nationals, ESPN, the Big Ten network has done really well with, you know, Big Ten wrestling. But wrestling's one of those sports, as other male Olympic sports are, that when there's a budget crunch or you know, some kind of any kind of a financial challenge, it's easy to cut the sport. So we still have a lot of sports, but you know, there's just some like men's gymnastics and men's volleyball. They're just, you know, they're hanging by a thread, and it's sad to see that. And you know, we would hate to see wrestling get to that point. And it doesn't need to be. We just need to kind of put our heads together and continue to build, I think.
When you look at your current team, it's always great when you have leadership in there. It may be individual in your wrestling, but leaders in your room mean so much. So what do guys like Nick Lee and Brooks and people like that mean to you moving forward, even a young guy like Roman Bravo Young who has experience?
Yeah, you know, I think, obviously as a coaching staff, you know, we have to set and help develop the culture and we have to lead by example. And, you know, we've got to be the hardest working people in the program or you're not going to probably be successful, but you have to have student athletes that are willing to do the same thing and that care about the team, that are going to put the team first, and obviously, you know, when you put the team first, the less you think about yourself, not only is the team going to do better, but I believe you're going to do significantly better as an individual. So we need those people that have the team mindset and see the big picture and are willing to be coachable and kind of understand that, you know, that truth, because that's not really the nature that we have. You know, it's, you know, we think and high school kids, you know, they're told all the time, it's, you know, build your brand, think about yourself, when the best thing you can do for yourself is be a leader and lead by example and do the right things and be a team player. You know, that's how you build your brand. So it's just, just trying to, first of all, I guess just lead by example, but we count a lot on our kids, and you need peacemakers too. You know, you need the kids that kind of bring everyone together. That are, you know, it's not about being better than your teammate; it's about being the best you can be, and kind of lifting each other up. And I think we have that in guys like Nick Lee and Aaron Brooks. Carter Soroki's been really outstanding. He, as a incoming freshman, he's as good as any kid we've ever had, I would say. I mean, but it's up to him to go get it done. Obviously, Roman is stepping things up too. So we've got some good leadership. We just got to get out of their way and let them do their thing.
And sometimes you do have to do that. You do have to do that because something you've always promoted, you want to make sure that the experience is, there's work, there's dedication, there's discipline, but also there's fun to it. Part of the fun, I think, is when you have competition on a field, competition on a court, in practice. How fun is the competition in the room with this particular team, in your opinion?
Well, I think they're very competitive with each other. Some weights more than others. But, yeah, part of enjoying competition is enjoying practice, right, and being consistent. And if you're going to play big in a game or on a match, generally 99 out of 100 times those same kids are going to be consistent in practice. So, I think it's really important that they do have fun because they just perform better. You know, you're just freer and you can't be afraid to make mistakes or fail. And so, that's an important part of, but every kid has, they're going to make that decision for themselves, whatever their perspective is and what they choose to focus on. And that's kind of back to what we were talking about before is the leaders. We need them. If you're focused on competing for your team and one another because you care about each other and you care about the team, well, then you're less focused on yourself and you're going to just be freer and just more successful and you're going to enjoy it a lot more. So, but again, it comes down to the kids and then making that decision for themselves, but you got to enjoy what you're doing. There's a lot of things you could be doing outside of wrestling or whatever sport you're playing. You know, there's a lot of options out there, so you might as well enjoy what you're doing or do something else.
Cale, one final question. I appreciate your time very much on the show today. It goes back to something I talked about with Russ Rose a few times over the years. When you have sustained success, one of the elements that he always tried to convince his teams of is that, hey, you're 0-0. It's a brand new year. You have to now make this team the best you can make it. Is that the same thought process in wrestling that, hey, yes, you've built a reputation, quote, as you mentioned, built a brand, but yeah, you better be ready now because it's a brand new year?
Yeah, I think, you have to have kids that want to come in and set a new standard and want to be the person that's winning those big matches and not just a fan or somebody that's based off of what we've done in the past, because I think we had a little bit of that even last year where, we had kids that just thought, well, these other guys will win the match for us, but we didn't, Bo Nickel graduated and Jason Nolf graduated, these guys, Mark Hall is now no longer there. We don't have Vincenzo Joseph, Kassar is done. So, we need the next wave of kids that want to step up and be big in those big moments, and not just be a part of it, but to actually be the one that's out there scoring the points in the critical moments. And that's what we're looking for, obviously, when we're recruiting. Not somebody that just wants to say, oh, yeah, I wrestled at Penn State and they won the Nationals, a few years ago. It's all about what are we doing now and getting better and trying to, as a coach, we're looking to put our best team together, right? And if you think our best team's in the past, well, it's probably time to find a new job, right? I mean, we want to create our best team every year.
Cale Sanderson. Cale, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Yeah, hey, thanks, Steve. Have a good one.
Cale Sanderson, head wrestling coach of the Nittany Lions. Winner of four individual national championships, never lost a bout. Winner of the Olympic gold medal in Athens in 2004. And the head coach of the eight-time national champion Nittany Lion wrestling team. In fact, I guess still technically the defending national champions, right? Yeah. We'll see how this year plays out. It's going to be in St. Louis this year when it's all said. And it's too bad they missed out on a golden opportunity last year. I know Dick from Milton has called the show, and he was going to go out to Minneapolis. And I was anxious to hear how it was going to be wrestling in the Viking Stadium at U.S. Bank Stadium with all those seats. And, you know, with plenty of mats out there, it would have been great. But when you get to the final, there's a mat. Well, the mat's not that big in reality. In a football stadium. I was anxious to see how they were going to do it. How many people would have been there? It would have been one of those watershed moments. I think what Cale points out, and you can see it in the TV ratings. I did 4 or 5 segments last year focusing on the TV ratings of individual matches last year. Penn State-Iowa was one of them. And I combined it with the basketball ratings. And what it kept showing over and over again was Penn State was involved in, because Penn State basketball is playing well last year, so they rated well. Penn State wrestling really rated well last year. And that's what Cale points out. There's a popularity in the sport that's greater than it ever has. So now the question is, you know, will certain athletic departments allow that momentum to continue because of what Cale talked about? He's absolutely right. All right, more coming up on tomorrow's show. Penn State, Ohio State tomorrow night. And Peter King will join us from NBC on Thursday. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com and News Radio 1070 WKOK.